Hour three of Justice and Drew, your Wednesday edition, is underway. You missed any other portion of the program, and download the iHeartRadio app. Check it out. We've got a Justice and Drew channel. Earlier on the show, we had gubernatorial candidate Jeff Johnson on. If you missed that, you definitely want to check that out. Yesterday, we had Tim Pawlenty on. It's got a lot of great guests, a lot of great interviews. For any portion of the show you missed, the iHeartRadio app, it's free and easy to download.
Fox 9 had an investigative report, and it was kind of an expansion on something that had been apparently well known, and this fraud taking place in Minnesota daycare centers, where individuals would sign up for daycare, but then the service would not be provided, and yet the state would be billed for the services. Fox 9 investigation kind of blew that open with a whistleblower who was claiming that the money was being received was actually also not just, there wasn't fraud just taking place, but the money was actually leaving the country and heading to the Middle East, potentially Dubai, potentially places that are run by known terrorist organizations like Al-Shabaab. And since then, Star Tribune picked up on it this morning, as did the Pioneer Press, and there was a hearing that took place yesterday.
Yep, the Senate is going to investigation, heading up the committee that is doing the investigation and had the hearing yesterday. Senator Jim Abler joining the show now. Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning. It's a great day for fraud.
It's a great day to be defrauding the state. Yeah. Apparently, it's very easy to do.
You go to work every day, you think, okay, I'll get up, I'll do this little talk thing, and you find news and kind of preach the gospel of truth and justice and all that. But what you should have done is open up a daycare, had 100 kids, have only 10 of them show up,
right,
and bill for 100. And then before they catch you, just keep taking the money and then leave town. I don't know why you didn't pick up on that model. Doesn't that make your head want to explode?
Senator Jim Abler, I watched the hearing yesterday, and what I found, and just observation, we talked about a lot. We talked about this at length on the show, and we talked about the fact that, and I'm glad to see that in some way we were wrong, because other outlets have picked up on it. But in some ways, like, the issue is so big, it almost makes it difficult to find a starting spot on where do you go from here. And I kind of got that sense watching that hearing yesterday, seeing the testimony from the whistleblower and then DHS come up and comment. They almost seemed annoyed that they had to be there and talk about it. What did you take away from the hearing yesterday?
Well, the new, fraud is not new. The part that was, I had a chance to chat with this Scott Stillman, the fellow. He made the mistake of actually telling his bosses that there was a problem, and they decided to fire him. And so he's just a regular guy. He's very talented at his forensic and investigative work. And you would think at a department that spends maybe $15 billion a year, they would go like, ooh, you're the kind of guy we want. But it turns out that not necessarily. And so at the very least, when they find a group that's doing bad things, they watch them for maybe a year and then send out literally millions of dollars to a daycare, or even a PCA is another area of fraud, he tells me, significant fraud, where they have a shell corporation that takes care of somebody who's not sick, and they keep the money. And, it's just bizarre. But the part that surprised me was that DHS was willing to look the other way on some of this, and that even internally, we had a chat before, he talked about some very horrifying graft almost that's going on between high-ranking officials and people who work in this department, and we couldn't get into that because it's, kind of hearsay-ish, but this fellow was at meetings where they said, well, no, we're not going to do anything about this, and could you change this report to make it look a little better? And everything that we kind of thought was there, mm-hmm, is there. And I don't know. I'd hate to tell you, but you've been right all along.
Ever since the story broke and we covered it on the show yesterday, I've gotten a handful of messages, more than a handful. I've gotten a number of messages from listeners and emails. I'm going to go ahead and read one that I got because it sort of encapsulates what a lot of people are saying. This person says, I'm retired from a fairly high level position within a county agency. This type of fraud has been known about for at least 10 years at the county and state level. County licensing agencies continuously reported concerns to the state. It is a common occurrence for a daycare licensor to do an unannounced licensing visit to a Somali-run daycare to find it either closed during normal business hours or it is open and there are only a few or no children present. State DHS told county agency for years that they were investigating and that unless a daycare was violating any licensing rules, there was nothing the local county licensing agent to do. There just seems to be this shrug your shoulders, laissez-faire kind of acceptance that, yeah, there's going to be a fair amount of fraud in this organization, or you know, in this program of funding and giving grants to daycare operations. I mean, if that's the case, I mean, can we just shut it down? end it.
That's the head exploding news part. We've been giving them tools to investigate. They have little fraud projects, and we're. And generally, Republicans are way more interested in fraud than the Democrats, with all respect. And you know, I'm kind of I like to work with everybody, but I was really shocked at yesterday's hearing. We invited other members to come, and a bunch of many senators came, and there were three or four Democrats there. And when they spoke to a person, they go like, "Well, we're not sure if this is a fair process, and you know, is this guy legitimate?" And not like, "What is he saying? Is there some truth to it?" It's like, "Oh no, well, we don't, you know, well, we're kind of okay with it, or we don't care." And the Republicans were like, I mean, their speeches were really good and actually good exemplars. Senator Klein, who is a pretty thoughtful ER doc at Hennepin County, kind of contested that this is even a good idea to talk about this. and Jerry Jasinski from Owatonna gave this a great speech, like, "This is horrible. Our people are counting on us." And Mark Coran, who's just a good investigative guy, hammered down on some really good points. Because at the end, we spend about $15 billion, and there's all kinds of need, and people would think that they're legitimate. But it's not okay to be wasting a dollar, much less potentially hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, and it sounded like from DHS that they... You know, they were quick to say this is nothing new, for one. They talked about the open investigations, but then they added, "We only have so many resources." And again, I'm kind of reading between the lines, just as a, you know, as an observer and talk show host. But I kind of took that as almost, at least in my mind, almost an admission of, yeah, we really don't have the means to crack down on this the way that you guys are probably going to want us to go and crack down on this, and so we're kind of all wasting our time. That was my perception of what I was hearing.
Yeah, and that, but also in my takeaway was the will. They're kind of okay with mediocrity, and they have an OIG, this Office of Inspector General, and they're looking thoroughly and hard, but they go home at 4:30 and call it a day and come back tomorrow and, you know, make sure they get the lunch break in. And
yeah.
In the meantime, people with serious, severe needs are going unmet.
Yep.
And other priorities we would have are not being fed. I mean, not even in this area. Just buy some roads. If we're not going to spend the money well on childcare, then take it away from that area and buy something good. You know,
What concerns me is that if this money had not been traveling through the airport, right, if they hadn't been loading up briefcases full of cash and flying them out of the country, this probably never would have come to light, which indicates that this is probably bigger. Because I feel very confident in the assumption that this is not the only fraud that's going on, right? You got this one community of these, you know, Somali run daycares that are defrauding this program, and they're sending that money out of the country. But I'm sure that other or communities and other individuals are committing a similar type of fraud and just using the money for whatever they want to use it for, you know, domestically. So, I mean, yeah. How do we get a handle on the overall degree of fraud that's going on if the only ones we know about right now are the ones where they're loading up the cash into briefcases and sending it out of the country?
Well, actually, you get us on the job. I've been in office 19 years. Can you believe that?
Wow.
We were all younger then. And we've worked on fraud the whole time. And mostly the Republicans are like, there's fraud, we got to stop it, and let's make sure that's going to the right place. And so it's been a perpetual thing, and always Governor Dayton or the Democratic Senate at the time or whatever just really didn't want to do much. It is time to dig in. The news is, we had better dig in. We had just better. There was a woman, and this is not about Somalis necessarily, and just to be fair to the community, there are some, they're dishonest. Everybody's around.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of my point, yeah.
Yeah, but in this case, and it's kind of good they did the money leaving the country thing, there was this woman, happened to be a Somali, the Hopkins Park Board member that was featured, and so she was being sworn into office. And then she took some trips and went over to the Middle East and actually took some money with her that she was using fraudulently. And I guess she's in prison now, which is where she ought to be. But with this sort of thing, there is some money that went. And, you know, and just so your listeners understand, some of the small dollars that go over that people send to their families, they absolutely need those few hundred dollars to keep out of the clutches of the terrorists.
Sure.
So they can just eat, because it's a horrible country. You go to the store, you might get shot if there's even food at the store.
Right.
No banks. It's really primitive. But that doesn't excuse the behavior of people who are taking $1 million and, you know, I don't know what they're doing with that money, but these fraud schemes are just intolerable, and maybe this could be part of the governor's race. Do we care about fraud or not? Or do we care about the people who need services at any cost? It's got to be about a balance. I mean, serve the people, but you'd better do it with a narrow, narrow margin for losing money along the way. That's the headline news. Is the department really doesn't care? That's the news.
Talking with Senator Jim Abler, where does it go from here? What's the next step after yesterday's hearing?
Well, this is the start. It was a really sensitive thing. So can you go do a hearing based upon a news report from a guy, you know, a reporter?
Right.
And I thought it was irresponsible not to look into it. And I, at the hearing, I announced, is this smoke or is it just a fog machine? You know, one of those smoke machines they use. And I think there's some fire under the smoke, and we're going to be on it. This is going to be my major project between now and next session. And next session, we're going to hit this hard. And, you know, if there's people covering up, then someone should have a head roll. And it's not okay. And there's going to be a new governor one way or the other. So if people think it doesn't matter who you elect for a governor,
right?
This is an example.
Has there been anything out of Governor Dayton's office regarding this? Have you heard anything?
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did, because this has been going on for over 10 years, according to emailers, and even in the Fox 9 story, they've indicated that this was brought to the Dayton administration's attention well over a year ago.
It's not been a priority. And so, as I've been thinking about this, it's the legislature's job to watch the people who watch. And so we're here to watch the watchers, and the people should watch us and hold us accountable of any party. But there's a duty. There's different perspectives in what we would buy as Republicans and Democrats. And I like my priorities, our priorities best. But, you know, whatever they buy, they'd better be buying what they said they were buying and not buying corruption and favor and offices for people. And if this guy, I had a chance to talk to this Stillman fellow in person, and maybe he'd come on your show. He's just a regular guy. But there are things that happen in private meetings that would make your head spin about who's getting some benefits and political figures. It was just really interesting. And I don't know this fella at all, but he seemed credible. Some people knew him and said he's a real straight shooter. And so there's smoke. And so now it's my job to lead our committee in defining ways to make sure that every penny goes towards a designated purpose, to help child care, to help a PCA needing person, help some person who can't get out of bed to function in the day. And that's what people like us to do when they agree that's a good idea. Nobody, none of your listeners in particular, are like, oh, yeah, let's just spend hundreds of millions of dollars so they can just go squander it on rich living somewhere. Nothing of the sort.
Yeah, after I appreciate your time this morning. I'm going to go ahead and put you on hold if you wouldn't mind off-air sharing that contact information with Sam so we can move forward. I would love to have that person on the show.
Sure.
All right.
You have a great day and keep up the fight.
Senator thank you, sir. Jim Abler, thank you so much for joining us this morning and keep up the good work on this issue, okay?
Thanks.
Take care.
You know, and I look, from my perspective, too, I think it's important to keep in mind in circumstances like this. And I was hesitant to respond to a couple of tweets yesterday just because, stuff gets lost in translation. But, you know, when it comes to this particular issue and dealing with this fraud, it's best to just stick with the basic facts and even to go so far as to say that the potential of money leaving the state and heading overseas, even to a terrorist organization. Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, that brings attention to it. But you just need to start at the basics and focus on the basics. There is rampant fraud taking place, regardless of potential justification that people might have for partaking in that fraud. You just stick with the fraud aspect of it right now. Because think about it for a second, Drew. This circuit, I mean, how, if you're DHS, and this is not a pass on DHS by any stretch of the imagination, but how easy would it be to commit this? You have a ledger. The only way that a DHS official could actually properly do an investigation to make sure it isn't happening is if you had somebody there at the daycare 24/7 to find out when those individuals were actually being cared for. Mm-hmm. I mean, how easy is it to just cook the books?
Right.
Because you don't have enough manpower to send to every daycare center to justify, billing the state for the subsidies for that low-income child care.
This is why, you know, conservatives, we push back on these programs so much, not because we don't care, not because we don't have compassion, not because we want to see people suffer, but because we know that there's no way for the state agencies to pull off to effectively execute and manage these programs without a ton of waste, fraud, and abuse. These things are better done in your community, locally, through charitable organizations, through the community getting together, identifying needs, and filling those needs as a community. Yet we've abandoned that concept and we turn to the big daddy state government and say, do this for us, spend millions of dollars doing this for us, and then this happens. And you call it out and you push back and you fight against these programs. This is why government should be doing the bare minimum. When you talk about social safety nets, when you talk about welfare programs, I'm not saying get rid of them, but they need to be the bare minimum because they're not good at it.
651-989-5855. We'll get to your phone calls coming up. More on this. Oh, yeah, and the Southwest light rail price tag has increased. Well, they have.
Because they're not good at it.
Senate hearing yesterday held legislation proposed to now crack down on daycare fraud. The state lawmakers yesterday held that special hearing. We had Senator Jim Abler on the phone just a moment ago following the Fox 9 investigative report, what appears to be rampant illegal activity resulting in the loss of millions in public money. Scott Stillman, the former state computer forensic investigator who worked on fraud cases, was the one to kind of blow this wide open. One community member encouraged lawmakers to get together with daycare owners committing fraud. This issue is epidemic, very serious. Somali community member Omar Jamal said, is that money going out of the country? Yes. DHS management believes a small number of bad actors are to blame. There are many, many fine Somali child care centers that are providing excellent care to our children, said Carolyn Hamm. DHS said none of the cases it's charged so far had any direct link to terrorism. Fox 9 was told by state and federal agents that some of the fraud money is going overseas, Likely some of it is being skimmed by terrorist organizations when it arrives, especially it arrives in Somalia. We're going to talk with David Gartenstein-Ross about Al-Shabaab next week. He's a foremost expert on that terrorist organization. Yesterday, one of the DHS officials had made a comment pushing back a bit on the claims of the $100 million a year flying out of MSP, saying that they didn't get billed that amount in low-income child care. You know, the state wasn't, so, you know, how can you end up with $100 million leaving MSP if we didn't even give out that amount of money? So there was some discrepancy there, but, and again, kind of going back to the core of this, okay, if that number's off, so what? The fraud is taking place. It's apparently rampant because right. when it's brought up, there is a level of, well, everybody knows it's happening. It's good that investigations are taking place. Why hasn't one been stopped, and why aren't more people being held accountable?
Right. What happens to the money after the fraud has taken place is a secondary conversation. It's important, and we need to have it. But let's not let the sort of provocativeness of the idea that this money is, you know, going through the airport and all this cash is going to possibly terrorist organizations or Al-Shabaab or things like that. Let's not let that end up being the focus, because again, as we were talking about with Senator Abler in the last segment, we only know about this aspect of it because of the report out of MSP. It could be much bigger. You know, we don't know where else in the state, what other communities, what other individuals are defrauding the state for the, you know, using these sort of same tactics.
Well, and to that, and again, you and what I was describing a moment ago is a good example of why you need to make sure that you focus. Let me rephrase that. It's better to focus on the crime at hand and the fraud than to get lost in the minutiae of the details, for as important as they may be down the line. Because again, DHS yesterday was able to push back saying, and I'm being sarcastic, but kind of the, well, they said 100 million, but you know, we don't get billed that much. And then they also said, well, you know, I know that they said that, you know, Minnesota had the playbook. But we found out that Wisconsin has this problem too. So again, when you don't just focus on the core issue and what needs to be taken care of, all you're doing is providing those that would rather just look the other way and not be bothered with the excuse and arguments to push back against what it is you're trying to accomplish. And we saw, and again, you know, commentary in public is one thing. It's obviously different. That doesn't hopefully take place in Senate hearings. But we saw people commenting online yesterday. It's like, yeah, you might have relevant points, but they're really irrelevant to getting your arms around and cracking down and stopping the abuse and fraud.
Ashley in Rosemont. Good morning, Ashley. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. The only comment I wanted to make is, do you think that this nonchalant, laissez-faire attitude comes from the fact that DHS doesn't want to see their budget cut? And, you know, there's going to be budget cuts if they realize that, you know, a quarter of this is just going fraudulently. And obviously your upcoming budget is based on what you've spent the previous year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they don't want to see that happen.
Yes.
But I think that that's something that, that needs to be looked at, because obviously they'd be losing staff, they'd be losing resources that they obviously probably don't need. But when it comes down to it, I've got a sister-in-law who works for Hennepin County, and she had worked years ago in the emergency assistance department. And at the end of the month, they're doling it out left and right because they want to keep their funding for the next month. So it's something to keep in mind.
Well, and they're.
Yes, I think that is a very real and legitimate aspect as to why they would much rather just sort of sweep this under the rug and ignore it and not draw attention to it.
Well, and you're stuck between a rock and a fraud case because.
I see
what I did there? Yeah, it's dad jokes. If you're DHS, right? So you could go. This is the route you can go. You can go, yeah, there's a problem. We don't have the manpower and resources to fully tackle it. Unfortunately, that is also an admission that you haven't been tackling the problem. So that in and of itself sends you down a path of people are going to be held accountable. So are you upfront and honest and be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. There's a lot of fraud taking place. We're handling what we can, but there's a lot more of it that we know is happening, but we don't have the manpower to deal with it, which could end up eventually putting your job in jeopardy. Or do you go the route of, no, you know what? We're working on it. It's not as bad as you think, but we're working on it. They're stuck. They're stuck in a very difficult. I mean, look, they need to be upfront and honest. If they do have a problem and it is as rampant as we hear, and they don't have the manpower to deal with it, then they should have been saying that all along,
right?
Instead of, well, we don't know what other investigations are, and we've cracked down on some people, so you know, just leave it to us. We'll handle it.
Pete from Lake City. Good morning, Pete. Go ahead.
Hello, Pete.
Oh yeah, just a second. Sorry, I was getting trying to make the comment that, we have a turn-in poachers for hunting. We need a turn-in line for the Department of Health and Safety for people who are committing these kind of acts. And I'm pretty sure most of the Somali community would be against this because their family, extended family, is victims of this terrorism. So I think they would probably turn some of this in, especially if there was a reward system like turn-in poachers. So turn-in poachers or whatever.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, Pete. And I actually had a couple emails, listeners emailed me yesterday asking that specific question is, who do I go to if I suspect there's a daycare in my community that is doing this? And unfortunately, I was like, well, normally you'd want to go to the Department of, the Department of Human Services, but I don't know if I have a ton of confidence in that right now. So you might be better off, contacting your state representative or your state senator or maybe even a member of the local media.
Well, and that initial report too said that a lot of the individuals involved in this, because you need to have a family involved in order to commit the fraud. So they said, unfortunately, a lot of those individuals were also getting kickbacks from the amount of money that they were receiving for being a part in the fraud and abuse. So, it would take somebody on the outside to go and be able to identify an individual. If you've got somebody who's got kids, but is also working with the daycare center to commit this act of fraud and they're getting money for it, I imagine they're not going to be going blah, blah, blah to their friends and neighbors. Hey, guess all the money I'm raking in. They're totally not watching my kids, but they're getting paid for it. And so am I. That's probably not happening.
Jeff in Cocado, go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, people. I had the misfortune of having to work in the building that houses DHS, and I'm here to confirm what you're saying about the laissez-faire attitude. These people don't care. This fits their narrative. They're there to distribute our cash by any means necessary in the guise of altruism, and they don't care about fraud. It's been going on since the beginning of the Great Society back in the 60s. I heard comments. I saw the reactions to the press conference yesterday and the hearings. They had it on TV. I want to tell you exactly where I was working, but the atmosphere down there was, oh, well, we don't care. Look, oh yeah, they're coming after us. So what? What about the AG? Why don't we contact? Why isn't Lori Swanson getting on this investigation?
Yeah, she still hasn't issued a, at least as far as I've seen, still hasn't issued a statement on it.
Yeah, she's too busy suing the Trump administration for straws or something like that. Representative Nick Zerwas, good morning, sir.
Hey, people!
What up, gentlemen?
How you doing?
How's it going today?
Excellent.
Good. So, the reality is with this rampant fraud within the Department of Human Services. We know it's there. We know its existence. And we know that Democrats and the governor just don't care. We have example after example where the Republicans in the House and Senate have tried to pass accountability measures that the Democrats in the legislature and the governor's office have repeatedly resisted. And Matt Dean brought up a great point during the press conference yesterday. They have two responses for everything, which is for every suggestion for cutting down on waste, fraud, and abuse. And that is, well, we already do that, and it can't be done. And so for any suggestion, any requirement, anything using technology to audit, well, we already do that. But if you want us to do any more of it, well, that can't be done.
We need more money.
And we are. No. There's not a price tag. They will not do it. They will not do it. When we had the Office of Legislative Auditor report that said $300 million went out the door in 5 months to people that didn't qualify, they said, well, they don't believe that report was accurate, even though it's from the Independent Office of the Legislative Auditor. They didn't believe that report was accurate, and even if it was accurate, they already cut down on fraud, and anything else would be not possible.
Wow.
This is why we just need to get out of this business. And we are out of time this segment, Representative Zerwas, but we will see you on Friday, correct?
We'll see you on Friday. The reality is we know $100 million in cash were declared on those forms through the federal government and were loaded up on flights and went out of the country. We know that as a fact. The fraud is rampant.
Yeah, and what we don't know is that just a drop in the bucket?
Right.
I mean, it's entirely possible that $100 million did not all come from this sort of activity, but at least a portion of it appears to have. We don't know the extent of the fraud. We just know about this little aspect of it.
Well, and I'm gonna change my opinion a little bit based off of what Nick said, because if they are that aware of it, and they're so willing to stick their head in the dirt about it, then maybe it takes the where it's going aspect of it to get people's attention. You know, maybe there's, so I'm going to change my view on that a little bit. I think it's still, facts are what matter. The fraud is taking place and you need to focus there. But if it really is a matter of the they just don't care and want to do anything about it, then maybe to bring it to people's attention, maybe they're saying, yeah, some of that money is going to Al-Shabaab, which is really, really good at like one thing, and that's like murder. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's enough to get people's attention, to bring the issue to the forefront so that something does get done about it to kind of force them to care.
Joining us next, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Deputy Secretary Eric Hargan will be calling in, and we're going to talk about President Trump's plan to lower prescription drug prices.
Justice in.
It is Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with Sam, who is screening your phone calls at 651-989-5855. Use the hashtag TCNT on the Twitters. You can communicate with us that way as we walk into the final segment of Drew's favorite day's show.
It is. I do love Wednesdays, that's for sure. It's called Hump Day for a reason, man. You're getting over the hump. You know,
Trump Day.
You know, when this show ends, we are a mere 6 hours of show away from the weekend.
Yeah.
Joining us now, Eric Hargan, a Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services under President Trump. Good morning, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
So President Trump has a plan to lower prescription drug pricing. Going to be some hearings. The House Ways and Means Committee said that they plan to conduct hearings on these proposals to bring down drug prices. Give our listeners a rundown of what the president is proposing.
So we have a blueprint that has 50-plus different proposals in it. So it's a really comprehensive plan to really get rid of some of the gamesmanship that's been happening in the drug market so far. We find places where we're going to get rid of rules and systems in place that have really hidden the prices of drugs from the consumer, where you kind of have this game between the pharmacy benefit managers, the plans, and the manufacturers, where they drive up the costs of drugs, the list costs of drugs. They don't pay that high price, but then the consumers pay a percentage of that high price when it comes out of this very opaque system that's going on. So we're going to try to drive some transparency into the system, get rid of some of the gamesmanship that's been going on, things like the gag clauses where the pharmacists are prohibited from telling patients if they have a lower cost alternative, whether they can pay in cash instead of going on their insurance plan. Sometimes they're going to pay less money. We're going to get rid of those kinds of things. We're also going to get more companies lured into the drug market as well. We're going to try to make sure we boost access to the market by generic companies, including biosimilar companies that make generic versions of biologic drugs, and get more innovator companies into the same drug spaces. So we get more competitors in the space, and we get a transparency into the system, more price transparency, and we think that's a free market approach to reforming the drug system and leads to an overall healthier market going forward, and one that's going to be low cost at the same time.
Yeah, I really like the idea of sort of clearing the way to make it easier for those that provide this necessary medication, you know, sort of the ability to remove some of the things that may be driving up the cost so they can roll these out and make it more affordable. One of the items on here, and I happen to agree with the House and Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady on this, was the idea to bring some of these drugs to market faster in order to increase competition. You know, as somebody, I've had my share of heart issues, and it seems like every time I go see my cardiologist, they talk about, well, there's this out there that they're working on, and there's this out there that they're working on. And, you know, as a consumer and as somebody that could benefit from this, I always internally go, why can't we get that faster? Why can't I get that now? How long do I have to wait? So that's really enticing for an individual like myself.
Yes, I think that's what we've seen, is that when we have more competitors in the same space, we're going to both increase access for patients, more options for them, and also drive down the cost. And that's what you get when you move closer and closer to a real free market in this space. You know, patients are waiting for these every day. You know, we know it. President knows it. And that's why we're going to work and get it done.
Is this more, do you frame this sort of as more of working around the edges when it comes to dismantling of Obamacare? I mean, we haven't talked much about that. We know the removal of the individual mandate, you know, and it certainly hasn't been dominating the headlines. But I'm wondering where these drug pricing proposals kind of fall when it comes to getting rid of what was put in place via Obamacare.
There were some parts of Obamacare that really dealt with drug prices as well. They added actually to the complication. Unfortunately, some of the rebates that were packaged into the ACA, which seemed like they would have reduced costs overall, didn't actually have that effect, unfortunately. Just, you know, because of the way that law was passed kind of in the dead of night at the last second, it led to a lot of provisions that weren't kind of adequately thought out to be put in place. And so things that seemed like they were good ideas at the time, ways to package rebates for drugs, really didn't turn out to be helpful. In fact, they turned out to be hurtful overall to the system. So we're going to be reforming that as well. Again, all with the idea that we're going to drive towards a system that allows patient access, more competition, and lower prices overall. We're also going to be updating our Part D plan in Medicare. That's one of the central parts of this. You know, I was here at HHS under President Bush when we implemented Part D. I was part of that push, and you know, it turns out it came in tens of billions of dollars under budget, which is strange and unusual for a government program. But the system as it was, because it's a government program, it kind of was stuck in time. And in the meantime, private drug plans really added on a lot of innovation in how to dealing with drug companies, how to manage things in the plans. We're going to allow the Part D plans now to update their rules and kind of join the modern era. It's been 15 years. It's a program that we think has worked well, but no system's perfect, and the system, because of the government program, kind of got stuck in time. So we're going to allow it to kind of modernize that system, which, again, we think is going to lead to lower costs overall for seniors.
In this story from The Hill, it mentions that Democrats have attacked Trump's proposals for not going far enough, saying that his plan does not include a call for Medicare to negotiate drug prices directly. But based on what you just said, is that accurate? And is that something that you think would be helpful?
No, I think that sort of reflects kind of a fundamental misunderstanding of how we access drugs in the Medicare program. I mean, the Part B program, part of what President Bush put in place was that it uses private parties, private plans, to operate that part of the program on behalf of the government. So already most of the drugs that we buy coming through Part D are done through private parties, private plans. And so when we give them negotiating power you know, sort of more access to being able to negotiate, and just like private plans do in many ways, we are actually allowing there to be the private plans to do what private plans normally do in these circumstances. But we are not having direct negotiation by the federal government as an overall behemoth. But that doesn't. That's because we don't do that normally.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just not. We don't do it now.
That's what I thought.
Right. Exactly. And so. And even for drugs that aren't in Part B, we're considering shifting some of those drugs to Part D to allow the private companies to start negotiating for those higher-cost drugs in Part B. That's going to be part of the proposal as well. What we can do administratively, I think we're going to move forward on a lot of that, but some of this requires congressional action.
It's an election year.
Yeah.
So good luck. We're talking with Eric Hargan, who is the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services for the Trump administration, talking about the Trump plan to lower drug pricing proposals. Is there a resource online? Is there a place where we can direct listeners if they want to learn more about it, or if they want to help advocate on behalf of this with their congressman?
Sure. Yeah, you can go to hhs.gov/drugpricing. And the plan is laid out there. Again, it's 50 plus different proposals that we think is going to add up to a real sea change in how we deal with drug pricing by the government.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Have a good day.
So yesterday I was you know, as I do every year, just paying very close attention to the Cannes Film Festival taking place.
That's really your line of cinema really gets highlighted there.
Taking place in France.
Get the latest Michael Bay news.
You know, I was exclusively reading the French news coming out of it, brushing up on my French. I don't know if you I'm fluent in French, Drew. I don't know if you realize this or not. Foreign French films are my favorite. Solo debuted there yesterday. But I was kind of keeping track of what was going on for that very reason. I'm getting to something. There was a it's not just random words. So director Lon Von Tiers debuted a new movie with Matt Dillon. Okay, and so there was a story going around that all these people were walking out of this film. Okay, at the can.
The serial killer movie.
Yeah.
I saw the headline.
Something's wrong with. Oh, I can't remember what the name of it was. Anyway, so yeah, I read the story on it because I always find those interesting when they debut a film at an arts festival like this. They have a competition. This is where you get the majority of movies that I will never watch. I was only paying attention because Solo, A Star Wars Story, was debuting there yesterday. So I went and read the background on this, and it was something. There was an interesting takeaway, which leads to this last story that we have before we wrap the show up. And there was a lot of violence in the film, right? It was about a serial killer, and they were in the story. They were highlighting what it was that people found so disturbing watching this. And I'm reading the story, kind of going, well, this doesn't sound any worse than what you would get in your average sort of horror movie that goes down this particular road, right? Somebody made a comment in the article who walked out, and it was telling to me because they said, here we are at this film festival. We're dressed in all of our formal wear to take in these artistic films. I'm not here to go and see this type of horror. I'm not, right. It was a contextual thing. You know, it's like it didn't sit well with the patrons there.
Usually I wear sweatpants.
Right.
When
you know,
I see this kind of movie.
Yeah. It was, who's the guy that did Hostel? I can't remember the guy's name, but I'm like, okay, I get it. From that perspective, if you're not the kind of person that's going to see one of these really awful detailed slasher films and you're there, you know, to go to your after party and you're in a tuxedo, I can understand. Yeah, I'm walking out. I don't want to bother with any of this. Right.
Right.
That makes it. Context matters.
Right.
Okay. It's a long way to get to this.
Whew.
Reason.com.
You could have just said, you know, context matters.
Yeah, but that was a fun little story. Got you to laugh. right? I'm not sure how much Sam enjoyed it, but I know you were over there kind of, I'm wondering where the heck this is going.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the journey, Drew. Have you not watched Lord of the Rings? Sure, the Eagles could have taken them to Mount Doom, but what fun would have that have been?
Right.
Spotify has introduced its new hate content and hateful conduct policy, which promises to suppress the songs for violent or hateful lyrics or offstage behavior.
Yeah, Spotify's getting into the into the content policing game.
Yeah,
good
luck,
man.
Unfortunately, they've kicked open the doors for groups, particularly this feminist organization called Ultraviolet, which has now sent a letter to Spotify thanking them for their initial steps of removing R. Kelly and Triple X Tectation. I've never even heard of them.
Some band I've never heard of. Tentacion.
Sam, are you familiar with?
I have no idea.
Okay, all right. But they're saying that they could go further.
Right. And basically the context here is that R. Kelly and whoever is in this band are abusers. They're accused of engaging in abuse towards women.
Right.
So Spotify said, fine, we're not going to play their music anymore.
Right. Right.
Cool. Okay.
But then Ultraviolet shows up and says, well, these two men are not the only abusers on your platform.
Yeah. She goes on to call for the company to exile Eminem, Nelly, Don Henley of the Eagles, Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, Chris Brown, rapper Tekashi something or other, Ted Nugent, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, just to start.
Yeah. That's just a drop in the bucket.
Just to start.
So Spotify's not going to play music anymore?
Yeah.
That's kind of the road that they're heading down if they were to go and do that. Which, look, Spotify was... I don't know if they were misguided in what they were doing originally or... I mean, because essentially Spotify has to decide, because they've gone down this road, now they're going to have to set their own standards. So what are Spotify standards of which they're not going to allow music to be played? And wouldn't they not have just been better off to let the listener decide what it is they want to listen to?
Right. They're going to have to start getting rid of Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yeah.
He married, his 14-year-old cousin or something like that.
David Bowie.
Yeah, David Bowie had accusations levied against him.
There's one particular Depeche Mode song that, you know, it talks about a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're dealing with, you know, flamboyant, provocative, artistic types, and it is not uncommon, you know, for them to engage in behavior that's sort of socially unacceptable. We have to get rid of James Brown.
Yep. Spotify's just going to have to stop.
Yeah. You're going to open up Spotify and it's going to be like, thanks for opening Spotify.
Yeah.
Let's have a chat.
Here's your contemporary Christian catalog. And even then.
Home to all the Osmond hits. Nothing but Osmonds.
You say that like it's a bad thing. I know. What if they happen to support Trump? That's probably got to go too.
Hey, got to go too. Hey, good job, Gabe.
Good job, everybody.
Right. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be back on at 6. I don't give me generation. Give me true communication. I don't give me sorrow. I want equal opportunity to live tomorrow. I'm Chris Addison here.